just say a few words about the International Crisis Group. We're a non-governmental, multinational organization dedicated to prevent conflict around the world. We have about 10 years of experience. The organization came into being after Rwanda and Sarajevo. And what we attempt to do is provide analysis of the factors driving conflict. Now we're working in some 60 countries around the world. And we have field-based teams who do that analysis. Based on that analysis, we come up with policy recommendations. And then some of us have the responsibility of trying to advocate those recommendations to different governments around the world. I've been named to make those recommendations known to the current administration and to have them adopt them immediately. So you can see how successful I've been in my current occupation. Now, with respect to Latin America, let me just start by noting that Carlos Fuentes spoke at the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Organization of American States in 1998. And at that time, and it was a much more optimistic time, I would say, in the hemisphere, he said that for the first time in his memory, North and South shared the same fundamental objectives and goals. Perception of the importance of political democracy, a commitment and concern for economic growth and social justice, and a similar view about how to get there. Clearly, that latter aspect, how to get there, is not shared today in the hemisphere. I would argue that the Bush administration has taken a fairly decent hand when it came into office and played it in rather disastrous fashion. And at this point, we're sitting at a poker table and with the rest of the hemisphere. We essentially have no chips. We have lousy credit. And most of the others at the table think that we deal from the bottom of the deck. And it's in that context that I think that there has to be a view that whatever administration comes to office, Democrat, Republican, there has to be a fundamental change in the way that we both relate to the hemisphere, work with the hemisphere in defining the major problems and priorities, and work with the hemisphere in trying to come up with common solutions. And I just want to emphasize that there's relatively little question about how the United States is perceived, this administration particularly in the hemisphere. The Latino Barometro had a poll a year ago that sort of set approval ratings for various leaders in the hemisphere. And the fact that President Bush was at the same level as President Chavez, it gives an indication, it was not very high, gives an indication of where the U.S. is. It's a combination, I would argue, of U.S. policies in Iraq, an appearance of a determination to act unilaterally, a seeming disregard for the opinion of mankind with respect to actions at Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, and on torture. And they've had an impact in this hemisphere. At the same time, I'd say the failure to find a workable policy on immigration that ended up with the default decision to build a wall on the border had an enormous impact, not only with respect to Mexico, but in the hemisphere as a whole. If you think about the Berlin Wall as a symbol of a failed Soviet policy, this border wall is also a symbol of a failed immigration policy. And it should not be surprising that the region, and not merely the governments in Mexico and the people in Mexico and Central America, have reacted quite negatively. And I think they also reacted negatively to the fact that when President Bush came into office, he was seen as the governor of Texas with a clear sympathy toward the region. And it was that the abandonment of that feeling of promise that's affected the way in which the hemisphere has seen this administration over recent years. Now, I should add that recently, this is a map that shows you Colombia. There's been another evidence of where the U.S. is in its diplomatic relationship to the rest of the countries. You had the administration's closest ally, Colombia, bombing the territory of its neighbor in Ecuador. That border, by the way, which is right here, is also the area that 150 metric tons of cocaine are taken out of Colombia across Ecuador to the coast and into the United States. The other border with Venezuela is also a border where now
this year we estimate somewhere between 250 and 400 metric tons of cocaine come out of Colombia, go across Venezuela, either with small planes or others, come into Hispaniola or go out to Europe. Both borders are fragile. Both borders have limited degrees of capacity to control them. And the fact is that it's been a failure of early warning policy, early warning in the hemisphere, not to have taken actions earlier to do something about these border areas. The FARC camp in Ecuador was not just there over the last several weeks. We issued a report in 2004 that essentially said borders, the weakest link in the Colombia security strategy. Thank you. And the fact is that nothing was done multilaterally or bilaterally to effectively try and cope with the problem that this posed to an Ecuadorian government and to try and cope with the problem with Venezuela in a slightly different way. In any case, the resolution that was attempted to be put forward at the OAS initially simply condemned Colombia, rightly I should add, for bombing the territory of its neighbor. But you would have thought that there would have been some ability in the United States to recognize that there is an issue posed when you have illegal armed groups that have encampments in sanctuaries in neighboring countries and carry out attacks, particularly since the FARC in this case has kidnapped civilians. They currently have some 500 civilians. They do traffic drugs, and they have carried out bombings that one would have to say constitute acts of terror. Now, where are we in the region? And here I think that you could say that the glass can either be half empty or half full. Half full, in the hemisphere, there is no military dictator. We have a general support for democracy in polling data. We have a continuing system of relatively free elections. We've got slow movement on reforms, justice reform. Much of the hemisphere is looking at the way to move from closed systems to oral process, to have more transparent systems of justice. There's efforts made to try and increase the access to justice. The Central American peace is holding. You now have a recognition, I think, that the FARC, the ELN, and the paramilitaries don't offer much hope for Colombia. And they've lost much of their capacity to threaten Colombia's institutions. There's a range of leftist governments in the hemisphere. They're not all the same. Brazil is doing quite well under a leftist president. So too is Chile. So is Uruguay. The fact is that we have, since the end of the Cold War, managed over the course of the past 18 years to recognize that you can have political diversity in the hemisphere, and it doesn't threaten either the United States national interest or the region's peace and stability. The OAS under Secretary General José Miguel Insulza seems to be building more and more credibility. I think it's quite positive that one of the outcomes of the recent crisis, and it was a crisis, one of the things that one has to ask is how did we let the situation come to the point where you almost had two countries going to war in this hemisphere? It seems to me that's a major failure of policy. In any case, out of the resolution came an agreement that the OAS would facilitate border monitoring mission on a permanent basis between Colombia and Ecuador. The authorities are still somewhat vague, which is unfortunate, but I'm hoping that they will use the available language, the vagueness of the language, to in fact do more rather than do less. And I think that one also then has to ask how that can help prevent a further crisis with Venezuela as well. Now, I said that was the half full glass. The downside, the half empty glass, is that Ecuador has had 8 presidents in the past 10 years. 14 presidents in Latin America have been removed before they finish their term of office, and some with only the barest of legal trimmings. And key elements of democracy, what I would say the elements that make democracy real, pluralism, checks and balances, separation of powers, the right and legitimacy of civil society to contest with the government what policy should be. In some countries, I'd say that they are under attack. And that worries me. This is a second chart that also worries me. What this shows, these are the countries in the hemisphere, and it shows in terms of what do you think about income distribution. This is from Guillermo Perry's World Bank study of inequality. And what it shows is that if you go down the line, Colombia, 54.5% think that income distribution is very unfair. Argentina, 54.3%. This is unfair. So combined, you have 94, 95, 96% of the population in several countries. And go down the list. The average is 88%, 90%, or 89%. My math is a little bit slow here. 89% either think income distribution is unfair or very unfair. That has implications for democracy. That's part of why the glass is half empty. And I think that that gets to why you have one of the reasons, not the only, but one of the reasons why you have political instability in some countries and movement away from what we would view as the legitimate elements of political democracy. It's one of the reasons why you see certain populist models in Ecuador and Bolivia. In addition to the fact that for 500 years, the indigenous population in those countries was excluded from the mainstream of economic life and political life. And I should add that there's also a concern about corruption in the hemisphere that also undercuts democratic institutions. It's one of the reasons why Chavez won in Venezuela 5 of 6 elections. Now, the fact that he lost the 6th in the referendum last December, which I would argue was a result of his overreaching and seeking to establish institutional mechanisms through the new constitution, that would have made it very difficult to see political change. Those are things that I think should concern us. Now, there's also, if I say, looking at the next administration, the fundamental strategic challenge is, 4 minutes, to design a new policy of inclusion and consultation, a real new deal for the Americas, that listens to them instead of lectures to them, that consults more and corrects less and engages rather than excludes. Now, there are lots of bilateral questions, Cuba, Venezuela, Haiti, Colombia, Mexico, Bolivia, that we can talk about in the Q&As. But three critical challenges facing the next administration: crime and drugs, inequity and inadequate development, and corruption and the lack of access to justice. Crime and drugs. We put out a report a couple of days ago, and what it essentially noted is that crime has overtaken unemployment in the hemisphere as the issue of most concern to the countries of the region. Organized crime threatens major institutions in fundamental ways, and in most countries, largely through the impact of drug trafficking on those countries. And here's just a quick look. This is the flow of drug trafficking now out of the region. Last year, John Walters, head of the White House office, announced, not too proudly, that there were 1,421 metric tons that came out of the region last year, 40% more than 2006. And as you can see, this is the chart. The bar chart shows the global, the cocaine production in, out of the three Andean countries over the course from 1995 to 2006. I've got other charts that go back to 1988, and they say the same thing. It's basically that there are, on average, 1,000 metric tons produced in three Andean countries, year in, year out. It shifts between Bolivia, Peru, Colombia. Colombia is the larger one here in the middle, the white area. And 2007, as I say, he announced it. Where did he announce the increase from 1,000 to 1,400 metric tons? He announced it in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, Friday afternoon before a weekend holiday, not in Washington, D.C. The issue, it seems to me, is what we found is that there are two policies designed to stop cocaine coming to the United States. Supply reduction, that's designed to stop this. This is 1988 to 2006. 204,000 hectares on average cultivated in the hemisphere, period. It doesn't make any difference if in 1999 you spray 60,000 hectares in Colombia and in 2006 you spray 172,000 hectares in Colombia. The net result on harvest is the same amount of coca is being cultivated and harvested, and the same amount of cocaine is being produced. Supply reduction policies, after $5.5 billion, are not working. They're supposed to reduce cocaine flow by 50%. It's not that they reduced it by 49%. They have not reduced it, period. And there are consequences. The aerial eradication does destroy food crops. It does force displacement of population. As I say, there are consequences, and it is linked to increased violence. Second, the policy of demand reduction in the United States, they're not working. 2.5% over the age of 12 used cocaine in 2002, 2.5% used cocaine last year. The only difference is the population grew. So it was 5.5 million who used cocaine in 2002 and 6.1 million who used cocaine last year. Equity and development, very quickly. Here's poverty, the percentage of the population and the number of people. And essentially, there's been, over the past 5 years, you had 5 years of essentially economic growth, 5.3% on average in the hemisphere. That's pretty good. In Asia, it was 9%. But it really just has not trickled down enough. You still have, this is an estimate, but let's say 194 million people living in poverty last year. And if you go back to 1980, 136 million people living in poverty. Sure, population's grown. Percentages have gone down, but just barely, still 36%. We're not doing as well as we should in the in helping the hemisphere move towards economic growth policies that have a direct focus on reducing poverty and reducing inequity. And now this is the most beautiful chart that I've ever found. This is CEPAL. The other one was CEPAL too. And what this shows is these bottom little things, this orange crosshair, that's 40% of the population, the poorest 40%. The top orange is the richest 10%. In Bolivia, take as an example, what it shows is that the bottom 40% share 10% of the national income. The top 10%, that's that orange up there, share 70% of the income. And you wonder why you've had political change in Bolivia lately. The other is that little arrow there says that the difference between the top 10% and the bottom 40% is 30 times in Bolivia. It's also about 27 times in Brazil and 25 times in Colombia. So we've got major problems of inequity. Unless we have a change in our economic policies designed to reduce inequity, and I think that largely means investment in rural infrastructure, investment in poverty reduction, we're not going to get there. And finally, the final challenge, and I have a little more here, but I won't go to it, but the final challenge, it seems to me, that undercuts democracy is corruption and the lack of access to justice. When you talk in this hemisphere, and you talk about people in the U.S. this administration about what are you going to do, the talk is, let's give more helicopters to the Mexican army to stop drugs from coming to the United States. Let's build up the police. I have no problem about building up the police in a democratic society. Civilian police are fundamental when they're independent, when they're not corrupt, and when they're professional. But they're not enough. You have to focus on the entire rule of law. You've got to focus on what you do to strengthen the judiciary, what you do to strengthen access to justice so that the poor have some sense of having access to justice in both civil and criminal. And that hasn't been done. And so when we talk about what should be done, the answer is build stronger institutions, democratic institutions, institutions that reflect a concern for the rule of law, for individual rights. And going back to Carlos Fuentes, I want to get back to the place when somebody like Carlos Fuentes says that we agree on the fundamental values of political democracy, economic growth that reduces poverty, that's focused on reducing inequity and social justice, increasing social justice, and building the rule of law and access to justice for all. Thank you very much.